While it doesn't seem to get much attention, you truly can be addicted to food. And it's not surprising that highly processed foods like industrialized chocolate, pizza, and French fries are among the most addictive. Studies have shown that when we consume highly processed food or foods that have had fats or refined carbohydrates added to them, these may be capable of triggering addictive-like eating behaviors. And highly processed foods are unfortunately known to be highly tasty and very highly preferred to unprocessed foods. And that is because extensive research has gone into manipulations of food to make them truly addictive. Some people who have food addiction will have higher body mass indices, and they report problems with highly processed foods, suggesting that those people who suffer from food addiction may be even more at risk to the brain stimulating and rewarding properties of highly processed foods. The first thing you have to do to overcome the addiction is understand that it exists, identifying specific foods and the properties of foods that help to trigger the addictive response. Then, it's not a matter of simply cutting back, but actually adopting methods that reduce the exposure and the consumption of processed foods, very similarly to how we educate other addicts, such as tobacco abusers, alcoholics, or narcotics users. While there needs to be more research, my guest today, Joan Iflin, literally wrote the book on processed food addiction. Unfortunately, it exists everywhere, and it is our job to be able to untangle the web that is leading us to increasingly consume more and more unhealthy foods. This is The Lindsay Elmore Show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show. A podcast for people who deserve to be healthy, with honest, open, and enlightening conversations with doctors, thought leaders, creatives, and spiritual gurus. You'll walk away with simple and tangible tips and tricks that allow you to live your healthiest life so you can pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. If you've been struggling to feel your best and feel like that food, sleep, relaxation, none of it is truly working, maybe you need to up your game with some infrared light and negative ion therapy. Infrared light penetrates deep into your body, going through your skin to muscles, nerves, and bones. Infrared light then helps to boost local circulation, bringing oxygen and anti-inflammatory molecules, as well as flushing away toxins. Therefore, infrared heat has been shown to reduce muscle pain, joint pain and stiffness, arthritic pain. It also helps to reduce stress and fatigue and supports the immune system. Negative ions act as attractors to bacteria and allergens in your environment, and they can help to inhibit free radical oxidation as well as reduce exposures to heavy metals, viruses, and other harmful elements, and can help to balance the body and the mind. The Amethyst Biomat is specifically designed to help provide infrared light as well as negative ions by electrically charging a mat full of amethyst crystals. It truly is an amazing experience to lay on a biomat. I have one as well as the tourmaline and amethyst pillow, and they have become part of my daily relaxation routine. If you want to get one of your very own amethyst biomats, head to lindseyelmore.com/biomat and you can be on your way to relaxation and less stress and fatigue throughout your day. Head to lindseyelmore.com/biomat to shop now. Dr. Joan Iflin has been creating breakthroughs in the recovery from food addiction since 1999. In 2018, she published a textbook, Processed Food Addiction: Foundations, Assessment, and Recovery. The textbook is the first academic publication describing how to diagnose and treat processed food addiction, as well as establishing the scientific basis for the disease. She is also the lead author of the first scholarly description of processed food addiction, which takes into account classic addiction diagnostic criteria, and it describes the definition of addictive versus non-addictive foods. The paper is entitled Refined Food Addiction, a Classic Substance Use Disorder. Dr. Iflin also has created numerous innovative online resources to help food addicts overcome their addiction. You can find her on the Facebook group, Food Addiction Education. You can download free handouts at foodaddictionresources.com. You can also find books about food addiction at foodaddictionbooks.com. Dr. Iflin earned her PhD in addictive nutrition at Union Institute University, and she also has an MBA awarded by Stanford Business School and a BA in economics and political science from Oberlin College. Her early career was spent understanding corporate and government behaviors while she served on the staff of the Joint Finance Committee of the Wisconsin Legislature. And she spent 5 years as corporate finance staff for a Fortune 200 company, the Continental Group. Dr. Iflin currently resides in Seattle, where she enjoys hiking, swimming, women's business groups, and the arts. Dr. Joan Iflin, welcome to the Lindsey Elmore Show.
Thank you, Lindsey Elmore. I am thrilled to be here.
I am too, because I think what you teach and your life's work is going to change the world. And so I appreciate you literally writing the book on processed food addiction and calling it out as this is just like any other substance use disorder. Now, for some of our listeners, they may think that's crazy. Like, how can processed food act on your brain similarly to heroin or cocaine or caffeine or all these things? But what is processed food addiction? How do you define it? And what can people look out for in their own lives to that may make them think like, ooh, I'm addicted to this stuff?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's a really, really good opening question. So, and you have two parts of the answer. One, I'll tell you what's going on in the brain, which explains a lot and relieves a lot of guilt. And then we'll talk about the other way that you know you have addiction, which is the 11 diagnostic criteria for alcoholism as they appear in overeating. And then that will answer the question of how would I know I was experiencing this? Okay, so an addiction is, it looks very mysterious. Why do people keep hurting themselves when they know better? It's got an incredibly and shockingly simple answer. You have addicted brain cells in the reward center of your brain, back in the midbrain. And when they hyperactivate, because they've been trained to flood the brain with craving neurotransmitters, it pulls the blood supply away from the frontal lobe. And all your rational thought is stuck inside those brain cells, can't get out because it doesn't have blood flow to it. So you have, I mean, in the case of processed food addiction and alcoholism and opiate addiction, and now vaping, you have these industries that know how to train those reward center brain cells to be addicted through Pavlovian conditioning. They you eat the substance, you ingest the substance, whatever it is, and it causes those brain cells to release a flood of craving neurotransmitter. And you think, wow, this is great. But then you crash. And in the crash, you remember, oh, well, that did make me feel better. So I'll go get some more. And it just gets worse and worse. The pain of the crash just gets worse. The euphoria gets less, but you can't stop. You don't want to anymore. It's not pleasurable anymore. It's not really enjoyable anymore. Or it's becoming less so, but you're compelled to go get it. You're getting sick, but you're still going to go get it. So that's what an addiction is. It's not childhood issues. When you get over an addiction and you get the substances out, your childhood issues will come up. But solving childhood issues before you've solved the substance problem will not work. It's not self-loathing. You get self-loathing from it, but it's not driving the food usage. It's the addiction. It's this high and a crash and a high and a crash and just feeling so miserable in the crash. It's this constant craving that those neurotransmitters create in the brain.
And what is, I've heard it said that one of the reasons that fast food, for example, is so addictive is because food scientists basically make it that way. They work on the balance of salt, sugar, and fat to make the foods hyper palatable. So talk to us a little bit about how the food industry manipulates our taste buds.
Okay. So when you have a plant has natural endorphins in it. It's meant to be pleasurable to eat. It's not like, oh, I have to eat so I don't die. You know, Mother Nature gave us another incentive. It's pleasurable. You do get an endorphin release from it. And when you eat a plant that still has its fiber in it, and it takes a lot of chewing, and it takes time for it to digest, and it's mixed with its own natural vitamins and minerals, that does not make you high. It's pleasurable, but you don't get high. But when you concentrate those endorphins through processing, you take out the fiber, you concentrate it, you heat it to high temperature, you make it into a syrup, then you have enough of a concentration of endorphins to actually create that high, which is followed by a crash. Now, one of the reasons why processed food addiction is so much worse than any other addiction is that there are 7 major categories of addictive substances, and they addict different parts of the reward system. So if you're addicted to alcohol, your dopamine system is addicted, but serotonin, opiate, and cannabinoid are still okay. And so if your dopamine's not working and you get off that alcohol and you have to go through withdrawal, you've got 3 other systems that are going to keep you going. But in processed foods, you've got sugars, you've got flour, which sugar affects the dopamine system, flour affects serotonin. The gluten in flour affects the opiate pathways. Excessive salt affects the opiate pathways. There are 4 different kinds of morphine in milk, in any kind of a mammal milk, because that substance is supposed to put that baby to sleep. Well, in the case of milk, it's a 100-pound animal. So there are 4 different kinds of casomorphines. Fat has been shown to activate the cannabinoid system, same system as marijuana. And then caffeine activates the dopamine system. And then there are food additives. So when you look at fast food meals, they combine all 7 of the major categories. It's very interesting, but whether it's a taco meal or a burger meal or a pizza meal, they all have those 7 categories of highly addictive substances. And then you're reinforcing it all the time with advertising, availability, cheap prices, and really targeting small children.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and so the targeting of small children is something that drives me crazy. In the movie, it is, and it's so rampant and so intentional is also a problem. I mean, from McDonald's having a set of characters to cereals companies that have like these very identifiable characters and slogans, and even, you know, in the movie Super Size Me, when he goes to that elementary school and they're all chanting in unison about Kentucky Fried Chicken and a Pizza Hut, a Pizza Hut. We have normalized and honestly glamorized unhealthy food to the point where I'm sure some of our listeners who are saying like, okay, processed food addiction, that's not a thing. That's absolutely not a thing. So if somebody is taking a step back and being like, you know, I do occasionally have fast food, or, you know, I reach for the frozen pizza sometimes, all the things. How do you know that you have a processed food addiction?
Okay, so let's do one thing at a time.
Okay,
I want to wave this around if it's okay. It's the textbook.
Go for it. Yeah, let's show it to us.
Can I do a little textbook waving here?
Yeah, absolutely. You wrote the book.
This is a 240,000 word book. It took me 3 years to write it. I looked at 8,000 studies. I filtered out 2,000 studies. There's page after page after page of research showing the existence of this condition. And I know everybody's saying to themselves, that's BS, because I've never seen a study on food addiction. Well, why does that work? It's because all the research, not all of it, but a lot of it, on obesity, eating disorders, and drug addiction is illuminating the findings of like relationship problems in people who are chronic overeaters. That's supporting of one of the diagnostic criteria for an addiction. So how do you know? Let's go through the 11 diagnostic criteria. One, if you are experiencing unintended use, so you are going to eat one, but you eat the box. You're going to buy one, but you buy two. You're not going to stop for fast food on your way home from work, but your car drives itself into the fast food place. You're going to eat clean today, but by 10 o'clock, you're in front of the vending machine. That is all unintended, unplanned use. Number two, failure to cut back. You want to cut back. You've tried to cut back, but it just comes back. That is over 70% of Americans. Over 70% of Americans are overweight or obese now. A third of Americans at any given time are trying to diet. So, I mean, 86% of Americans buy diet products. So that's rampant. Number two is definitely rampant. Number one, if you ask people, they'll talk about it. Number three is time spent. You're spending time thinking about it. You're spending time going to get it. You're spending time battling in your mind whether you're going to get it and how much you are getting it. You're hiding often, finding a hiding place to eat it. And then you're sleeping it off. You just feel like too brain fogged and tired to do anything else. It just increasingly, it creeps in over time that you are spending more and more time in your relationship with the substances. Number four is cravings. Everybody has it. And I like your word normalizing, because people don't even know they have them. Like, I had a prepared meal company once and we were serving a high-end law firm. I call those highly functioning, like top of the heap lawyers at the end of the week. And they'd say, you know, my cravings seem to be gone. Okay, so that was my clue that this has reached every corner of the culture, if those highly functioning people have it. So cravings, it's just thinking about food when you're not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And people mm-hmm. think that's normal. Until I was 44 years old, I thought that was normal. I didn't know that you had the option of not thinking about food all the time.
Yes.
And you
yes,
do.
Absolutely. That is a very, very common tactic. I have coached hundreds of people to help them quit tobacco. And that is something that we talk about all the time. Just because you're thinking about a cigarette doesn't mean that you have to have a cigarette. And eventually you will not be thinking about the cigarette anymore. So, you know, just because you're thinking about fast food doesn't mean that you have to eat it. And eventually you won't be craving the fast food anymore.
Yes, you're going to get the substance out and then you're going to get the reminders out.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Because the associated cueing is actually the leading cause of cravings. Mm. But you're doing exactly right. When you do that with your patients, you're rewiring brain cells.
Right, right. Absolutely.
All right. Then the addiction starts to spread outside of the body. And there are three criteria for measuring that. Number five is unfulfilled roles. You want to be a great mother, but you can't get down on the floor anymore, but you're still eating.
Mm.
Want to have a better career, but you're too brain fogged to apply for promotions.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the middle of school and you have to quit because all you can think about is processed foods. And you're too brain fogged to finish your education.
Mm-hmm.
You used to be a volunteer, mm-hmm. but you don't do that anymore because you're too tired or you don't want people to see you. So unfulfilled roles. The next one is relationship problems. Somebody wants you to stop eating and you can't. Mm-hmm. You wait until they go to bed so that you can get your stash out of the laundry room. You're not intimate with them anymore because you don't like your body shape.
Mm-hmm.
When they're talking to you, you're too brain fogged to really connect with them. They easily upset you because processed foods create extra adrenaline in the system.
Uh-huh.
And you're fighting with them a lot or you're angry at them a lot because you've got these artificially pumped up adrenaline levels in your system. So that's relationship problems. And then you have activities given up.
Mm-hmm.
You don't mm-hmm. want to go anymore. They don't like you anyway, and you can't talk to them. You're not really connecting with them, and you're really too tired, and your joints hurt too much, and your body shape is unacceptable. So you start to give up activities, and you'd rather go home and eat anyway. The mm-hmm. cravings are so intense.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you get into the progression. Well, actually, there's one more. It's becoming dangerous, and that is called hazardous use.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in alcoholism, you know, it's drunk driving. But people drive with their elbows while they're getting the fast food in their mouths, or they drive even when they're groggy from the processed foods. I remember a police officer just telling me once, I stop one car after another car, and the back seat is full of fast food wrappers. They don't even see the stop sign. They're so numbed out. Mm-hmm. They're not, the frontal lobe's not functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So hazardous use. And then you get to the progression, use in spite of knowledge of consequences.
Yes.
Number nine, and that's universal practically.
Mm-hmm.
My doctor said not to, but... And then the rationalizations start. But it's my birthday, but she made it just for me. But it would be awkward if I didn't take some, but I don't want to be left out. All that insanity.
Mm-hmm.
But we know it about cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who cares whether somebody's smoking a cigarette? I'm not smoking a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gotten there with processed foods yet. So use in spite of knowledge of consequences, and then tolerance. Or a progression. I used to buy it once a week. Now I'm buying it every day. I used to only have it in the evenings. Now I have it at lunch and I'm starting to have it at breakfast. I used to buy this size container. Now I'm buying this size container. It's just progression is kind of hard to put your finger on until you look at number of times per day you're using the food and a size of container. I used to just have it in the kitchen, but now it's in my bedroom and it's even in the bathroom. It's just like spreading. You can see it spreading. And then the last one is withdrawal. This is where a lot of just, you know, medical professionals fold their arms and stiffen their backs and say, it doesn't have a withdrawal syndrome. It's not addictive. Yes, there is a very distinct and painful withdrawal syndrome. It's headache and nausea and it's irritability and it's depression and it's fatigue. And people know that they have this because they're eating for reasons other than hunger. They're eating because they're anguished. They're eating because they're mad. They're eating because they're depressed. They're eating because it hurts. They're eating because they have a headache. They're eating because they're tired. That's not eating. That's drug use.
Yeah, they're eating out of habit. They're just eating out of the habit of eating. And yes, I agree with you. All of these things are very much like you can hear. You gave us so many excellent examples of why this is an addiction. And so, you know, you took the CAGE questionnaire and put it on steroids. So for those of you that don't know the CAGE questionnaire, those are four questions you can ask yourself to decide if you are an addict. It's typically used for alcoholics. You know, do you ever get the feeling you should cut back on alcohol? Do you ever get angry or assertive when other people confront you about your alcohol use? Do you ever, what's the G? E is, do you ever have an eye opener? That's what you were just saying. You know, I used to only have it at night and now I have it in the morning. And then the third one, the G is, do you ever feel guilty? Do you ever have, yes, do you ever have problems? And that I think leads to the activity avoidance. You know, you're just guilty that you can't get over this thing. And so you don't want to go.
Self-stigmatization in overeating is very well documented in the research. I hate myself. I want to get over this. I am a failure. I am a loser. I hate myself. I hate myself that I can't get into the body shape that I want. I hate myself that I have to take more. It's bad. Yeah. And then, okay, so I need to be careful here, but the medical community is reinforcing that. Why can't you? What's wrong with you? Well, what's really wrong is that you're a medical professional, but you haven't been trained in identifying and helping me with a really severe addiction.
Right. I got into a debate with my cousin, who's a physician, and he's like, I'm like, so how's your practice? And he's just like, it's an endless stream of diabetes, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, all the diseases that everybody in the United States thinks are normal.
Normalizing illness.
Right. And he was like, I don't understand why these patients just can't get it. Like, it's calories in, calories out. And I was like, that is so wrong. I mean, like, I was like, no, 3,000 calories of kale and apples and broccoli and carrots and you know, grass-fed beef is not the same as 3,000 calories of fast food. It's not calories in, it's not calories out. If people are always dieting and never getting anywhere, they have chronic inflammation. And as you are saying, they also just simply may have an addiction to food. And so processed foods. And so we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. SomaVedic is the ultimate EMF protection. It is designed on the principle of controlled release of energy from precious and semi-precious stones. This allows you to create a coherent field covering more than 2,800 square feet. That's right. It forms a bubble of protection against electromagnetic frequencies, including 4G and 5G, Wi-Fi, and your cell phones, and it protects against oxidative stress and free radicals. The Somavedic Ruby and the Vedic models are there to help repair cellular damage from non-native EMF exposure. It helps the body to repair itself from the harmful effects of EMF. The balancing effects reach a 100 feet radius in all directions. And that's not all. Somavedic can also help to harmonize your water. Somavedic creates structure in your water that helps it to benefit our bodies more. By creating hexagonal patterns, water is reorganized into its natural state, just like nature intended. You can head over to www.somavedic.com and use the code LKE to save 10% off. That's www.somavedic, that's SOMAVEDIC.com, and use the code LKE to save 10%. Be sure to shop using the code so that Somavedic knows that we sent you. And now, let's get back to the show. Why do you think that so many healthcare professionals just don't get it? Do you think it's just because it's so new and we're still kind of coming to terms with the fact that this can exist? Or is it, you know, lack of education? What is it?
It's because it's so devastatingly profitable. Okay, so who are the advertisers for most media? It's processed food and pharmaceuticals.
Yes, absolutely.
So if you look, so I'm being an undergraduate economist, I went back one day and I looked at what percentage of the domestic economy was health and food before tobacco came into processed foods in the mid-1980s. And it was about, I'm holding up my hands like a pie chart. It's about the two combined was about 15%. Of the US domestic economy in the 60s and 70s. Tobacco comes into processed foods in the mid 1980s. And by the 2000s, it is one third. But the thing that was horrifying is the health industry revenues grow right along with the processed food industry revenues. Mm-hmm. So it was about evenly split when it was 15% of the US domestic economy. And it's still now at one third, still evenly split between those two industries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
It's too dang profitable. And the pharmaceutical industry controls medical education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I just read that story this year in Rob Lustig's metabolical book, which is that when Rockefeller decided to fund medical schools and create medical education, he had a pharmaceutical product. It was a derivative of the petroleum industry, coal tar. And so he wanted medical education to be a marketing arm for his pharmaceuticals, and it still is today.
Yes, and you know, the Rockefellers and really the Carnegie Foundation as well. The Carnegie Foundation directly funded the production of the Flexner Report, which basically narrowed medical education to a pill for every ill. That's and it's still 110 years later. We're still doing that. And so after the Flexner Report came out, homeopathy, osteopathy, eclectic medicine, physiomedicine were completely derided. And some of the practitioners were jailed. Or if you look at Dr. Gerson, I mean, Dr. Gerson literally had dozens of patients heal from cancer because of their diet. And they took his medical license and they were like, you can't heal people from cancer. Yeah, and it's shocking and astonishing. So talk to us about emotional traumas that go into processed food addiction and how they relate to other addictions.
Okay, super. Good question. So processed food addiction starts, I once said to Rob Busty, I said, really starts at birth. And he said, no. It starts at conception. Mm-hmm. And he was right. Mm-hmm. If the parents are eating processed foods, the DNA is already replicating in an addictive fashion. Mm-hmm. So the genes are turned on that promote addiction. So the child is born and the mother might be eating sugar, and that sugar does come through the breast milk. So mm-hmm. already their brains are addicted. Mm-hmm. Then, so you remember probably in tobacco, the tobacco industry tried to addict 10-year-old boys mm-hmm. with the Joe Cool Camel campaign. Mm-hmm. Well, at that point, the regulators stepped in and said, no, you can't addict 10-year-old boys to nicotine, sorry. Wow, so here comes processed foods. Mm-hmm. And they can just pump those commercials through the cartoon programs. Mm-hmm. So you see, this is very dramatic. One researcher just sat there and counted the cartoon commercials for sugary, fatty, salty foods, highly addictive foods. It was about 150 before tobacco came into processed foods. In the mid-1980s, they bought Kraft, Nabisco, and General Foods in 3 years. Several things happened in the environment to create the perfect environment for processed food addiction, and the tobacco executives saw it. Mm. In 1963, they started to get experience. They bought Hawaiian Punch, and then Kool-Aid, and then Capri Sun, and they started building the market for sugar for children, sugar addiction in children, children, toddlers, newborns. So they were perfecting that market. There's an internal document from the tobacco companies that's been published on a study of it, showing exactly how they carried over the details of tobacco marketing to sugar for children. It's chilling. It's horrifying. It's just very hard to believe that kind of depravity could exist on the earth, but there it is.
Well, so, I was just speaking with Jeff Weitzman, and he said it's very hard for average people to understand that true sociopaths exist in the world, and they get so blinded by money that it doesn't matter if they're doing evil, if they're doing truly evil things like marketing sugar addiction to children. I mean, even I remember candy cigarettes as a child.
No coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely no coincidence. It was there to create an addiction in me to both sugar and to tobacco.
Tobacco, yeah, normalizing it. I like your word. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And this is why medical schools do not teach this. Mm-hmm. And if you're a doctor, you've got a license to defend. Mm-hmm. And if you get outside of the standard of care for that license, you can lose your license.
Yep, quickly.
Processed food industry has come after around the world in Australia, South Africa, and I think another case in Sweden. They've come after individuals like osteopathic surgeons who have started to advise their patients not to eat refined foods. Mm-hmm. They actually went after their licenses, and two people in Australia and South Africa had to spend years and thousands of dollars defending their licenses, and they did get them back. Mm. But it's a concerted effort. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But there are organizations out there that are working to make it safe for doctors to stop recommending the calories in, calories out. Instead of that, define the world. Alcohol is not water. You can stop drinking alcohol and still take fluids. Mm-hmm. But people say, oh, you can't stop eating food. Oh, no, mm-hmm. no. You got to do the same thing with food. There are toxic, highly addictive, processed substances that are hidden in real food, or they're just flat out sold as food. It's the same thing with nicotine. They concentrated nicotine, they extracted it, concentrated it, and then added it back to the cigarettes. They hid it in the cigarettes. So we're talking about people who don't have connection with the suffering that they're creating. They are sociopathic. That's what sociopathic means. You don't have any idea how you're affecting another person. For example, Howard Moskowitz graduates from Harvard with a PhD in experimental psychology of marketing. What he creates is a method where you can hide addictive substances in food without the customer detecting it. So he created a method to maximize the amount of sugar, fat, and salt in processed foods. So something innocuous like tomato sauce, before it was Howard Moskowitz -ized, had no sugar in it. But that by the time he was done with the product, a little tiny half cup serving had the same amount of sugar as two Oreo cookies. So this is part of the addiction business model. They hid extra nicotine in cigarettes to make sure that you got addicted before you realized it. And they hid sugar, fat, salt in processed foods. People could have eaten a slice of bread in 1970 and gone on about their day. But by 1999, that slice of bread had so much sugar, fat, salt hidden in it that they would then eat half the loaf before they could walk away.
Well, and in just looking up, because I've never heard of Howard Moskowitz until you just mentioned it today, he developed cherry vanilla Dr. Pepper. He's worked for Cadbury. He expanded the marketplace for Dr. Pepper. He has worked as a consultant for Campbell Soup, General Foods, Kraft, which owns 40 brands, PepsiCo, and he's there as a food optimization scientist. And
is that sick or what?
Yeah, it's so sick because what he says he's trying to do is get to the bliss point.
No,
you're actually hijacking people's brains, you weirdo. Like, don't do that. Yes.
Newborns. You are making it impossible for them to do anything but think about food. You're creating learning disabilities, attention deficit, poor decision making, no impulse control, and memory loss.
And bullying. You are encouraging bullying because you've got children that are overweight getting picked on and made fun of from a very young age. It's really disturbing. So a lot of our listeners are moms, and they don't want their kids addicted to food, and they don't want to be addicted to processed foods. And so what is kind of at the top of your list of, like, here is how you avoid a processed food addiction, and if you realize that you have one, here's how you can break it?
Okay, so it's too late to avoid it. A recent study showed that adolescents in this country are eating 67% of their calories in processed foods, up from 61% in 1999. It's too late to avoid it. So when I realized that those high-end lawyers had it, I said, okay, everybody's had it. The other piece of evidence for everybody's already got this is the, how addictive are these substances?
Right.
How many uses does it take? Like, you know, they say, oh, you know, one injection of heroin, you're hooked. That's not true. But no, a lot of people are.
It's one injection of heroin and you're hooked if your brain is already predisposed in that one chemical pathway to get addicted. You know, it's, I know this is going to sound crazy to you, but I was such a rebellious child that I actively tried to become addicted to cigarettes, and it never hooked my brain.
Yes, that's part of the ethos of cigarettes.
Yeah.
It's part of the lie, part of the deception.
Right.
Oh, you're rebellious. You know, you're rebellious. They got the suffragettes to smoke on that lie. Think about Virginia Slims, you've come a long way, baby. Oh, or they're sexy. Rebellious and sexy. You think Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, oh, they're so sexy and they're smoking and flirting. No, no, no. They just told lies about these products and what they represented. And they're master marketers, they're master advertisers, they're master deceivers. They've done the same thing with processed foods. Oh, but this is so delicious. No, it's not. It's sick. And Winston tastes good, like a cigarette should.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you look back to the ads of the 50s, you know, four out of five doctors recommend Marlboro, you know, it's like, wait, what? You know, I mean, you think about that less than 50 years ago, physicians were smoking cigarettes inside of the hospital on rounds.
Advertising them.
And advertising them.
Doctors recommend Chesterfield.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you're not a man unless, you know, they would put the cigarettes in the hands of men coming back from the war with military tattoos on their hands. Real men smoke Marlboros.
Yes. And then there's also the outright marketing of first tobacco and now processed food to the medical industry. Like, you look at what you're served on a tray after a surgery, and you're like, this is not going to make me healthy. And also, people have been strategically targeted who have mental health disorders.
It's merciless.
It is. It's merciless. And so,
diabolical. It's really devilish.
So tell us what you eat. How do you eat on a daily basis? And how do you recommend people eat?
You asked a super excellent question. How do you deal with this? Yeah. Because your children are already addicted. Mm-hmm. It only takes 5 servings of a 30% sugar solution to start the brain alterations. They've done the work in rats. So the concept here is to create a protective bubble around your home. And in your home, you don't have food stimulation. You don't have the processed foods themselves. Nobody's allowed to bring them into your house. You're not going to go out and get them, and you're not going to pay for them with your children. And they're not allowed to eat them in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yes, they're going to eat them at school. But for like my own kids, once I got that what I was giving them was making them irritable with me, I just like, oh, I'm going to stop doing that. Yeah, I think I'll stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
My big issue was irritability, anger, raging. I had a lot of other health problems, but it was the end of the raging that got me into this career 26 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but on my side, I said, you will never leave that to my kids. You will never leave the house without enough food until I see you again. So you don't have to choose between the toxic substances at school and going hungry. You will always have plenty of food with you. Mm-hmm. And I developed a method for making a ton of food in 2 hours on Sunday afternoon, freeze half of it, put the other half in the back of the refrigerator. So I had fast food at home,
mm-hmm.
much faster than I could get in a fast food outlet.
Oh, yes.
That's how you do it. You make clean food available. You never, ever, ever, ever fight with anybody about it. Of course, I was talking all the time about the miracles that I was experiencing, allergies, sinus infection, bloating, brain fog, cravings, fatigue. And of course, the big one, the raging stopped. The raging, the critical nature, the anxiety. And of course, then the very, very easy weight loss. Mm-hmm. The weight was just falling away. Weight loss is not hard. It's these substances are addictive and very fattening, and these are not. And then you just go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that the diet industry certainly doesn't like. We know now that restricting calories, fasting is a precursor for binging. Mm-hmm. So we're not doing that anymore. We just need to get the fattening foods off our plate, out of our house, get the addiction to settle down,
mm-hmm.
and that weight will take care of itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It is astonishing if you really just shift the way that you eat. And I think, honestly, to break a processed food addiction, it's not only about what you eat.
No, ma'am.
It's about how you eat it. Talk to us about your opinions about that.
Okay, so when I got done with the textbook and I realized it's a severe addiction and people are severely traumatized, mm-hmm. you know, you grow up with an addicted brain and you are emotionally unstable. The people around you are addicted. They're emotionally unstable. And you can't really learn very much because you're trying to learn in an addicted brain and all the blood flow is going back to the addicted brain cells. That is traumatizing. And you keep going for help. And they say, oh, just eat less. What are you kidding? Like, mm-hmm. why didn't I think of that? Alcoholic. Oh, just stop drinking. Oh, what a good idea. I didn't think of that.
Mm-hmm.
No,
mm-hmm.
this is an addiction. You've got to retrain about 100 billion brain cells.
Mm-hmm.
So once I saw that, I knew that the right level of treatment, the right match for a severe addiction is residential recovery for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
Well, we're not sending 70% of the population to residential recovery for a couple of years.
Sure.
But we have Zoom now.
Mm-hmm.
So we created an online community. And as one of our members said recently, when I'm at home, I'm in residential rehab because I can open my screen. And the name of our community is the Addiction Reset Community. I can open my screen and be in a rehab facility. I can make my home into a rehab facility just by turning on my screen.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it just works.
Yeah.
You can't use the frontal lobe. You can't teach this. Like, you can't teach an alcoholic all about alcoholism. They're not going to go away and stop drinking. You can't just teach people about tobacco. You've got to engage a different part of the brain, which is the conformance drive.
Right, right. You have to get people to the point where they actively and very strategically think about, how am I going to avoid my triggers? How am I going...
Avoid my triggers.
Yes. How am I going to avoid my triggers? And what am I going to do...
Instead.
You know, that's super duper important. And so what gives you hope? You know, I mean, it's, I love, because I feel like a lot of the times our shows are about, you know, everything that's wrong with the world. But what gives you hope right now?
Well, what gives me hope is you.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, because everybody who listens to your podcast now is going to know that it's not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that they've been told to do about it made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not a failure and they should try again.
Mm.
And now I'll just be honest here. There is a program on the face of the earth that recognizes the need for what we're calling immersion recovery, because the mm-hmm. triggers for processed food addiction are very intense and they're very dense. So the food is about 20% of it. We call it cue management. Trigger mm-hmm. management is another big component. Relationship management is mm-hmm. a big component.
Mm-hmm.
Sleep management, movement management, and then really food production. Like mm-hmm. how do you make enough food such that it's always, always there in the refrigerator?
Mm-hmm.
Social relationship management, workplace management, all of those places are packed with cues. And mm-hmm. so I say the food is about 20% of recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so much more. And you have firmly convinced me that processed food is an addiction that can be broken, that people can work through, and that people can come out on the other side of healthier, happier, more emotionally stable, all of the things. So
it's amazing. And it happens every time.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you finally get somebody to the point where the blood flow is going to the mirror neurons and the mirror neurons are engaged with healthy people, there are 140 diseases associated with processed foods.
Wow.
And the hope is, I want everybody to know this, your factory settings are still there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You get this burden off and you get the toxic relationships and the toxic media out, and you're doing healthy things. your body just reverts back to incredibly healthy
and well. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it so much. Listeners, I hope that you will all go check out Dr. Iflin's work. I have been so inspired by her today. You can check out all of her resources at processedfoodaddiction.com. Dr. Iflin, thank you so much for coming in today and being a guest on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Yep.
The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Derek Lugo. Sound design and editing is by Jive Media. Support The Lindsay Elmore Show by heading to lindsayelmore.com/podcast. Your contribution, no matter how big or how small, helps us to bring the best guests to the interview chair. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts. Share this and all of your favorite episodes with a friend and on social media. Be sure to tag at Lindsay Elmore Show and help us bring the pod to more people.